from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Montgomery, in for Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, founder and owner of the outdoor clothing company Patagonia, Yvon Chouinard. He calls himself a reluctant businessman. The longtime rock climber and surfer says he doesn't use computers and doesn't believe in managing from behind a desk. Far from it. As part of his business plan, Chouinard has long championed environmental issues and flexible schedules for his workers. He joins us to talk about the reissue of his book, Let My People Go Surfing. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Montgomery, in for Michael Krasny. In 1957, Yvon Chouinard went to a junkyard in Southern California. He bought a used coal-fired forge and other tools, taught himself blacksmithing, and started making hardware for rock climbing. The rest, they say, is history. His work expanded, and eventually a company was born, Patagonia. But it's no ordinary company. Each year, Patagonia gives away 1% of its total sales for environmental causes. It's what Chouinard calls an earth tax. Patagonia also pioneered innovations in the workplace that have been copied by other larger corporations. Yvon Chouinard's book, Let My People Go Surfing, The Education of a Reluctant Businessman, has just been reissued for its 10th anniversary. And Yvon Chouinard joins us from Jackson, Wyoming. Yvon Chouinard, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
You are in Jackson, Wyoming, on a telephone, and you're there not by chance. It's a place you return to every year, and you've been doing that since you were a young man. Talk to me about that and why you return to that part of Wyoming every year.
Well, I first came here in 1956, and we have a log cabin here, and we spend from May until November. I like to... The rest of the year, I like to, you know, live next to the ocean where I can see the horizon. But here, I like to see mountains for half the year anyway.
And it's really kind of part of your story. I mean, you are the founder of Patagonia. It's a very successful outdoor company. But you're not in the office all the time, like right now. And it's something you call, perhaps in jest, perhaps quite seriously, you call your MBA, your management by absence. That you're serious about that, though, that in the way you operate the company.
Yeah, I'm not the kind of businessman that's a micromanager. In fact, I never even wanted to be a businessman, and so my attitude towards management is to hire the very, very best people and train them if you need to. But basically, when they're in their job, just leave them alone. And that way, I don't have to be there working, you know, myself. It's just a way I've come to grips with being a businessman, so that I don't have to act like a businessman. And you know, I've never liked people telling me what to do, and I don't like to tell other people what to do.
And so, Patagonia, I think most people know the brand. Outdoor clothing and gear and equipment, but it had a very humble beginning. You got into climbing. You were born into a French-Canadian family in Maine. You moved to California, and you got into climbing in a very, I think, unusual way. And it had to do with falcons. You're living in Southern California. What happened? How did falcons get you into rock climbing?
Well. Yeah, I had to learn to climb down the falcon's eyries, you know, so I learned to rappel with old hemp ropes, and then one day I was out in the San Fernando Valley at some cliffs, and I saw this guy climbing up, and that kind of knocked me out. I thought, I had no idea people climbed up as well, and so I slowly... When I was 16, I drove out to Wyoming and went into the Wind River Range and climbed my first mountain with, you know, Sears Roebuck boots and had no idea what I was doing.
Well, you actually got lost, didn't you?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I split up with, I was with some other young guys, and we all went our separate ways, and I was the only one that got to the top of the mountain. Turns out I did a new route on Gannett Peak.
That's really funny. Now, in that period, or soon after, you discovered Yosemite, and you were involved in some of the early ascents of El Capitan and other parts of Yosemite. What was that like, climbing in Yosemite, late 50s, I think we're in here? I mean, you know, it must have been a completely different period. And is that something that you would love to recapture? I mean, it must have been amazing.
Well, you know, I think that era was the last of the fossil fuel age of America, where, you know, gas was 25 cents a gallon. And I bought an old Chevy for $15 and drove it for years. And you could fix everything in the car, and camping was free. And, you know, you could always get a job, temporary job, to make enough money to last the rest of the year. I mean, I was living on 50 cents a day, and at times I was eating cat food, and but we were completely free. I mean, I don't think that you can have that freedom anymore.
You were hiding out from the rangers, as I recall in your book, when you were up in Yosemite. You would play a sort of cat and mouse game with the rangers, as I recall.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're only allowed to stay a couple of weeks in the campground, so we would hide out in the rocks behind the campgrounds and just to stay as long as we could, and then we'd go up on climbs and spend days and days on the climbs, and yeah, that was just part of the game.
You know, there's sort of a anti-establishment, if you will, flavor to your book, and It seems like these early years built that up in you. You clearly don't like the regular routine of life, the office routine, what have you, bureaucracy. Did that attitude begin at this point in your life, or did it come from someplace earlier?
No, I think it came from earlier. I mean, I was born in a French Canadian family in Maine, and when I was 7, we moved out to California. I couldn't speak English. Shortest kid in school. I was put in grammar school. We're in back in Maine. I was in a parochial school, so you know, I ran away from school, and that put me on a different path my whole life, really. And when high school kids were going to the prom, I was down in the bottom of the LA River gigging frogs, and so
there was
a
river back. There was a river back then, eh?
Well, it still is, but yeah. In fact, they're trying to restore it.
So we get to the '60s. We talked about you buying this blacksmithing equipment from a junkyard, and you start making equipment for climbing for yourself and your friends. And you started with pitons, correct?
That's right. Yeah, yep. Those spikes that you drive into the cracks into the rock. And yeah, the stuff was made in Europe at the time, and the Europeans had an attitude of you conquer the mountains, so they would put pitons in for protection, and they'd leave them in, and their attitude was to make the climbs easier for the next party, and we came with a philosophy of John Muir and Emerson and Thoreau, and that we felt like, well, you go into the mountains or you do a climb, and you don't leave anything behind, as if no one's ever been there before. And so these soft steel pitons that the Europeans made, you could only use once. And so I started making pitons out of hard steel that could be put in and taken out repeatedly.
Right. They were recyclable, so to speak. And at what point, then, did this concept of clean climbing come up, and was that later on? And talk to me, because you start seeing a connection between the tools you were developing and this idea of having less impact on the environment.
Well, you know, I think everything that man does has a downside. there's an unintended consequence of everything that we do. And once there got to be quite a few climbers in America putting in pitons and taking them out, pretty soon we were damaging the cracks themselves. And that's when we said, you know, gee, we're causing this problem, so therefore we've got to do something about it. And that's when we switched over from making pitons to making these aluminum chocks and that you can just put in with your fingers, and it'll hold your weight, and in fact, it'll give you just as good a protection as pitons.
And this was copied eventually around the world, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We changed the whole way protection in climbing is done now, and that started a revolution. Of course, you know, it was hard convincing other climbers who were, you know, smashing in these big pitons into the cracks to suddenly trust their lives to a little piece of aluminum put in with your fingers.
And we are talking with Yvon Chouinard. He is the founder and owner, co-founder and owner of Patagonia. That's the iconic outdoor clothing and gear company. His book, Let My People Go Surfing, The Education of a Reluctant Businessman, has just been reissued for its 10th anniversary. Was that the first time you saw a connection between, you know, the tools you were developing, in terms of having impact, broader impact on the environment and elsewhere in terms of your work and your company? Was that the first time you saw that connection, or was that already in your mind?
Yeah, that was the first time. I mean, you know, I was brought up by my parents to have a sense of responsibility. You know, you make a mess, you clean it up. And we realized that we were responsible for, here we thought we were doing the right thing by taking the pitons out, but actually we weren't. And so we felt like, you know, it's our responsibility to do something about it. So we proceeded to phase out pitons and to develop a whole line of clean climbing equipment.
So this all eventually led to the birth of Patagonia, the company. And it, you know, started growing significantly in the 70s. I remember as a kid in the 70s or early 80s, certainly, the Patagonia brand. And I grew up in Oregon, and, you know, we went up to the mountains, and Patagonia was pretty cool stuff. At what point, you know, early on, did it become clear to you that this company was going to be more than, you know, what you and a few of your friends and could handle? You know, at what point did it become clear that this was actually going to be a company, whether you wanted it or not?
Well, yeah. I started making pitons in like 1957 or something, and I got into making clothing in the early or late 60s, and I still wouldn't call myself a businessman. I still was only doing this to support my climbing habits and kayaking habits and skiing habits and things like that. We never expected it to be a larger business. And I think it was only in the late 80s, when we were growing so quickly, we got into financial trouble. And that's when I came to the conclusion that I was a businessman and I better start paying attention to what I'm doing, because I was making all the same mistakes a lot of companies make when they're growing, and we're growing too quickly and, you know, just opening up one more account after another, opening up retail stores and just growing for the sake of growth. And that's when I realized I got myself into financial trouble, and that's when I started educating myself as to, okay, I'm a businessman, so how can I be a businessman and not fall into the trap of being a businessman.
Right. Well, I want to ask about that because it's a very interesting section in your book in terms of when the company got into trouble and how you got out of the trouble and how, well, your attitude about growth. I mean, you have problems with growth. You don't like, you don't believe that we can have growth forever, unfettered growth. But at that point in time, your company had invested in a lot of inventory, correct? And it turned out that the product wasn't good. Explain what happened to the company at that point.
Well, we were growing like 50% a year, and we were building inventory to grow another 50%. And there came a recession in the late 80s, and we were having a hard time getting bank loans, and then we only grew 30%. Well, that's a big difference. And so we had to lay off a bunch of people, and I had to borrow money from individuals. My accountant even introduced me to some mafia guys who were willing to lend me some money at 28% interest.
Right.
Which I didn't do. But we were in real deep financial trouble. And that's when I decided to question why I'm in business. In fact, all of us, we were all in the same boat. And so we all sat down and started writing down what our values were. And that turned into a philosophy of doing business a different way. And that eventually turned into, 10 years ago, I wrote the book, Let My People Go Surfing, which is the philosophy of the company. And that got around to, it's been in 9 languages now, and it's been used in a lot of universities, and so it's 10 years old, so I rewrote it this year and added another 40% material and talked a lot about what we learned in the last 10 years.
And we're talking to Yvon Chouinard. He's the co-founder and owner of Patagonia. That's the clothing, outdoor clothing and gear company. If you have a question for Yvon Chouinard, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Yvon Chouinard, I want to ask you, obviously you have very strong views on the environment, global warming, in fact, very bleak views about where this world is heading. And in addition to the environmental causes that your company has supported, I believe it's donated more than $75 million over the last couple of decades. The company also pioneered different ways to run the company for its workers, flexible schedules, famously at your Ventura headquarters. If the surf is up, your workers can go and hit the waves during work hours in some cases. And a lot of these things have been copied by other companies. Talk to me about when that happened and when you realized that you really needed to make it a sort of friendly workplace.
Well, I don't think it happened. It happened from day one, really, because my first employees were just like me. None of us wanted to work in a company, but we had to make money. And so we came up with a philosophy of working where we, went up the stairs 2 steps at a time because we could hardly wait to get to work. And I think that's the secret of life is to work at something that you really love to do instead of dragging your butt to work every day. And so just because you work at a company doesn't mean you have to do it like everybody else. We have our own on-site child care center, one of the first put in corporate America. And it's because we want our kids around us. And then we want flex time, and we want to feel good about the product that we're doing. So, we don't want to make a toxic product like everybody else does. And so it pretty much started from day one, really.
All right. Well, I want to take a caller. We're going to go to Nasmul in San Mateo as a question for Yvon Chouinard. Go ahead. You're on forum.
Oh, I don't have a question. I just want to compliment Patagonia for the commitment they made to the proper treatment of animals. I'm a big fan of your merino wool, and I know you had a shortage in some of your stock because you didn't like the way a supplier was treating the sheep. And I just think that is so fantastic. I've always considered you, and many do, the, well, I hate to say it, but the apple of outdoor wear. Your commitment to quality within reasonable price range has been greatly appreciated. The way you treat your workers is greatly appreciated, and you're a very progressive company, and I think that's why you have such brand loyalty. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I want to take another call. We're going to go to Brad in San Jose. Brad, you're on forum.
Hello?
Yes, you're on forum. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, this is Brad from San Jose. Yvonne, I'm 28. I like to go surfing, and I wondered if you had any advice. I'm currently in real estate brokerage, and I wonder if you have any advice for, you know, business advice for what the world needs, or any advice for a younger guy trying to figure out how to live with integrity and a sense of freedom that you had when you were in your younger years.
Okay, Brad, thanks for your call. Yvonne Chouinard, advice for a young person who is in the corporate world, but who also likes to surf?
Well, that's a big question. I'm not sure how to answer that. I hope you're working with the right company that lets you go surfing when the surf comes up.
I kind of doubt that, but anyway.
Yeah, you know, my attitude towards management is I don't care when you work, as long as the job gets done, and that should be. I don't see what's wrong with an attitude like that. And if you're not working for a company like that, then maybe jump to another one or something. I don't know.
Well, okay. So we just have a minute or so left. I just want to ask you, you know, the environment is obviously a big issue for you. Patagonia has been very involved in the fair trade movement. Has that been relatively successful, would you say?
Yeah, that's pretty recent. And it has been very, very successful. In fact, you know, the factories that we work with that are fair trade factories, you know, you could eat off the floor, and it not only treats their employees right, but and the employees make more money than they would otherwise, but you get much better quality in the end. So it's a win-win-win type of situation, really.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Yvonne Chouinard, for joining us. Yvonne Chouinard is co-founder and owner of Patagonia. He's also the author of Let My People Go Surfing, The Education of a Reluctant Businessman. Yvonne Chouinard, enjoy your last couple of weeks out there in Wyoming.
Well, thank you.
Okay, coming up after the break, we'll be talking with journalist Mark Sanilo to talk about the presidential race and preview the upcoming debate. Lots of things to talk about, lots of things in the air. So stay with us. This is Forum.